Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Talk radio for the thinking person, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
Hello, infidels. Welcome to the Savage Nation, the Friday edition. Now, normally Friday is a throwaway day. It's for the lazy hosts, where you just call in whatever's on your mind, and they react to what you say by repeating what you said in a different way, and then you say it again, and then they say it again, and they say thank you, and they give you a free, I don't know, rug or a mat or a toupee, and then the next one calls in. And I've done it. I've enjoyed it, because sometimes you get good calls, but I'd rather make this one count, because we're in a countdown for the last days of America. Next week, your president, not mine, your president, I didn't vote for him, he represents the extreme far-left band of American politics. He is not really an American in the sense that he's an America laster, hates the country. Next week, your president will be going to Japan, specifically to Hiroshima, and he will not apologize, but just by going there, he's apologizing for America having won World War II. Instead of celebrating Memorial Day with Americans, he is going to go to Japan and basically genuflect before the Japanese, in essence saying, I'm sorry just by being here because I'm not really like the rest of them. I'm different. And I've been studying, as I did yesterday on the Savage Nation. I've told you that bombing Hiroshima saved Japanese lives. An invasion would have been much worse, not only losing about 500,000 American boys, but Japanese lives as well. I told you that the civilians had been training for months to kill the white boy, the Yankee, when he arrived in Japan. Even old women were being taught to cut bamboo stakes into knives and to kill any a foreigner who appeared in the streets. So the question is, the question to you is, what do you think about the bombing of Japan? Should the U.S. have dropped nuclear weapons on Japan? I've read all of the sides of it. Some fools, of course, make it racism. The fools say, well, why didn't they use the bomb on the Germans? Because they were white. They only used them on Japan because they were Asians. Well, that's a fallacious statement for two reasons. One, because Germany had already been crushed and defeated by the time the atomic bombs had been dropped on Japan. Secondly, need I remind you, those of you who never went to the School of Reality, many German cities had been firebombed to ash prior to the use of the nuclear weapons. So the fact of the matter is, Japan needed to be bombed with atomic weapons to stop the war. They were not going to give up. They were a militant people. And by the military standards of World War II, attacking whole cities to destroy military targets within them, within those cities, was quite normal. I want to remind you, the British, the Germans, and the Japanese had firebombed whole cities, as did the United States against Germany in the last few months of the war. So looking at it in the context of 1945, dropping atomic weapons on Japan was quite reasonable. There was nothing racist about it, despite what the left has fed into your children's heads. The U.S. had firebombed Dresden, Germany, to see if it was effective. And by the way, we firebombed Dresden in the same month and year that we began firebombing Japanese cities. So it's not racism. It's only the hindsight of racists who hate America, who make it into racism, like Barack Obama, who's going to go to Hiroshima again, committing another horrible act against the American military and against the American people. And it leads me to ask the question in a more broader context of this. Who is the most hateful person in politics or the media today? That's right, you heard me. It is the most obscene word you can use, which is the word hate. Can't use it in the world today. So they use hatred. They conduct their hatred in other ways. They produce movies which are anti-American, which are, in essence, hating the country, and so on. Who in your mind is the most hateful person in politics or the media today? In order to lighten it up today, I will read from my delightful book, Teddy and Me, in order to break us away from politics sometime on this Friday. And if I'm in the mood, since this is Friday, which is the beginning of the Sabbath for the Jewish people and close to the beginning of the Sabbath for the Christian people, and of course Friday is even the Sabbath day for the Muslim people, I may read from the original Jewish Bible a passage that may reflect the times that we are living in today. That's depending upon the mood that I'm in. So that opens the show. The phone number is 855-407-282. And we can begin right here. KSFO, Corey, line one. You respond. What's your answer?
Hey, sir. How's it going? Long-time listener. And I just want to say that I do agree that the bomb needed to be dropped. I do believe that it would have saved probably over a million American lives. However, I don't feel that Obama going to Hiroshima means that it's going to be an outright apology because, you know, the Japanese, and it's not about me having mercy or sympathy for them per se, but having a worldview, the Japanese did bleed just like American boys bled too.
But why is he going there around Memorial Day? What's he trying to do? Why didn't he go there in December or January or February? Why is this anti-American Marxist constantly sticking his knife into the heart of America? What is he trying to say? Why would he go there around Memorial Day instead of being here with his wife and celebrating our troops who are laying on the ground for giving us freedom? What is he doing? Thank you for the call. That's too hard to figure out. That's all. 855-407-282. Bombing Hiroshima saved Japanese lives, according to every expert, except the communists in the universities and the fellow travelers in government. I mean, I'll remind you again, there's a great article on it by James Gibney, published by Bloomberg. Bombing Hiroshima saved Japanese lives. If you're in the mood to read something as opposed to just speaking, you can do that. And it's a long article. I have it on michaelsavage.com. The article is exactly right on why the U.S. was justified in dropping both nuclear weapons on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. I want to remind you that after the first atomic bomb was dropped on Hiroshima, the Japanese were given the opportunity to surrender, and they didn't. Remember who the Japanese were ruled by then. They were ruled by the military. It was a military junta that ruled Japan. It was not a civilian government, and they would not give up because they were trained in the Japanese art of Bushido, where they'd rather commit suicide than ever surrender. Did you know anything about that fighting spirit, which is quite admirable, by the way? I don't know if you know that, but it's quite admirable. And so, as I said to you yesterday, it's easy to sit here in the year 2016 and say, oh, yeah, we shouldn't have done it. We should have just wasted American lives and more Japanese civilian lives, by the way, by conducting a land invasion. But you don't know history if you make a statement like that. History dictates the opposite is true. I think it's a valid topic because, once again, we have the American president on an apology tour choosing the time when we celebrate our veterans to go to Japan and commit one of the most horrendous anti-American acts you can imagine. Just by going to Hiroshima, listen to what I just said to you, he doesn't have to apologize. By going there, he's apologizing. Do you understand that? This is how subtle this anti-American president of yours is. By choosing to go there around Memorial Day. Memorial Day is not about your barbecue. Memorial Day is not about you getting drunk. Memorial Day is about remembering the men who died to give us the freedoms that we enjoy today. Of all races, by the way. And so for this anti-American president of yours to choose that time to override in a certain shadow his little visit to Japan, instead of celebrating victory in the Pacific, more specifically victory over the Japanese Imperial Army, Navy, and Air Force, what he's doing is saying to America, you should be ashamed of yourself for having won World War II. I don't know what's next. Maybe he will go to before December is out. Maybe he will go to Germany and celebrate some kind of holiday that the Germans celebrate, having sympathy for the poor Nazis who died in World War II. We don't know how far this man would go. Maybe he'll go to Moscow on Red Square Day to celebrate the poor Russian soldiers who died in World War II. We don't know how far this man will go. But I'm asking you again, not so much whether it was justified to drop bombs the nuclear weapons on Japan, because I know most of you who are older know the truth, but most of you who are younger don't know anything about the truth, and you've been brainwashed to think it was racism on the part of Truman to have dropped those bombs. And so it's worth talking about. Maybe you'll learn something from it. And I think it's tied into the question I've asked separate from it, which is, who is the most hateful person in politics or the media today? I think that's a great question. And if I'm asking you who you hate the most in politics, go ahead, go for it. Make my day, because everyone hates somebody. Take a look at what the left is doing to Hillary Clinton supporters. Take a look at what the Bernie Sanders, communist, Khmer Rouge, are doing even to a leftist pig on the stage of the Democrat convention in Nevada. Take a look what they did to this leftist criminal, Barbara Boxer. They scared her to her core. Her Botox almost became undone. She gave a speech that she was scared for her life, that she was glad she had so much security, because the Bernie Sanders supporters were screaming at her, yelling at her, and they wouldn't listen to her anymore. They didn't want to hear any more about her land deals for her family here in Marin County and elsewhere, about the environmental lawyer in the family and the redistricting of lands here in Marin County up near Nevada. They didn't want to hear any more about it. So the fact is that the Bernie supporters are crazily angry, hoping that Bernie Sanders will arrest some of these old criminals should he become president. That'll never happen, by the way. But if you think there's no hatred in the political system today, you're not living in the real world. So let's tap into that. Let's go to the gold in the American political world, and the gold is the gold of hate. Because you know in your heart, whether you're for Trump, or you're for Hillary, or you're for Bernie, you know in your heart there's a vengeance somewhere inside of you. It's a topic nobody dares take on. But let's go for it today on the Savage Nation. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE.
Now, more of the Savage Nation on Talk Radio 560, KSFO.
So this debate's been going on for 7 decades now, every year, as we creep closer and closer to this anniversary, we debate whether the U.S. government was evil for having dropped atomic bombs on Japan, and of course the left wing says, oh no, we shouldn't have done it at all, we caused the war. I've heard it all. And of course it's easy to do so in a fat classroom living on tenure. But they weren't living in those times, and you know, it's a strange phenomenon for me, because I remember being a little child in New York around that time when the bomb was dropped. I remember to this day, I was a little child running in the streets. And I remember seeing, I don't know, it was the Daily News, some like a mushroom cloud on the front page of the New York Daily News, if I can remember it correctly. And I remember freaking out. I was a little kid. I remember grabbing the paper and running up and down the street, Longfellow Avenue in the Bronx, screaming, the world is coming to an end, the world is coming to an end, the world is coming to an end. I guess they thought I was crazy. I guess they thought I was nuts. No kid would do a thing like that. How would a kid have the foresight to even know what it was? How old was I? 3 years old? I couldn't have been more than 3 years old when I saw that picture, 1945. How did I have the foresight to pick up the paper and even say a thing like that? Well, the world surely came to an end for the Japanese in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And we sit here in America today, not even thinking about the fact that there are Islamo-fascists amongst us who are plotting every day while you take your child to nursery school to blow them up with a nail bomb, or if they can get their hands on nuclear material, set off a dirty bomb in the United States of America. And I will tell you this. If any of these Islamo-fascists ever did succeed, God forbid, in doing so, you would hear people at Harvard and other denizens of mental insanity saying that we got what we deserved. If you think I'm wrong, you don't know reality. I do. Now, let me give you another fact on this. As war got closer to the homeland of Japan, the Japanese government encouraged families to send their children into the countryside to escape bombing raids. So at the end of the war, there were nearly 1.3 million children who had been evacuated. But do you think that the government only had their safety in mind? You'd be wrong. An author by the name of Yamashita, who says that the bombing of Japan saved Japanese lives, said that they were intent on transforming the little children into what it called splendid little citizens who embodied national virtues. So what were these natural virtues? Well, they were very militaristic. The children kept diaries, which the government regularly inspected. They wrote comfort letters to soldiers on the front lines. They greeted processions carrying the boxed ashes of war dead. And they then taught the children to think about what will happen with the attacks of the foreign devils. They taught the children we must harden our spirits and resolve to launch a great counterattack. And so as the military was depleted, the military resorted to special attack units, the kamikaze pilots, and teachers hero worshiped these suicide squads as divine spirits who had, quote, reached the territory of understanding, whatever that means. But listen what the children were doing. The evacuated Japanese kids were sent on long hikes into the woods to forage for firewood, bamboo shoots, edible roots, frogs, grasshoppers, and then they were given over to exercising in spear fighting, sword play, and hand grenade throwing. And on these trips with the children, some of the teachers broke away to learn how to fly gliders to be loaded with explosives and flown into Allied ships. Well, you can read about it yourself, about the special attack units, the cultivation of militarism in the children, and such. And so you say, well, why didn't we just let them starve themselves out? Why did we have to bomb them? Well, think about what you just said. The left says, well, we didn't have to bomb them. Japan would have given up because they would have been starved to death. Do you understand what you just said? Do you have any idea what you're saying? How many Japanese would have died of starvation waiting out those 2 or 3 years until they would have surrendered? Secondly, they never would have surrendered, by the way, because Japan's military-dominated cabinet was still arguing whether to surrender after the Hiroshima bombing when news arrived of the bombing of Nagasaki, and they still didn't give up. They still wouldn't give up. Did you know that after the second nuclear weapon? Because they had Bushido, the fighting spirit, which said better dead than surrender. Think about what I'm saying to you. We are the opposite of that country today. We have become surrender monkeys in America, a nation of wimps.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE.
Here we go again. Breaking news. White House on lockdown after reports of what sounded like gunshots. Emergency vehicles, including ambulances, rushing to the scene. The president, of course, thank God, is nowhere to be found. He is safely on a golf course. So we don't have to worry about that, but I thought I'd give you the breaking news. Now let's go back to the regular programming, which is, should the U.S. have dropped nuclear weapons on Japan? Is this too esoteric a question for us when the apologizer-in-chief is about to embarrass America again? You know, if Trump should win, and if he sticks to his nationalist orientation that got him where he is, we will have a historian who will write the true history of America under the terrorist days of Barack Obama, and there will be a revision about who this phony really is. You will not believe what comes out when you see the secret papers of Barack Obama and his minions. I've tried to give you some of them over the years with three books now. Stop the Coming Civil War and Government Zero are my latest. They're all documented with footnotes. I realize that most of you don't read. You're sort of Neanderthalish in the sense that you've made your mind up that he's a great man, the Democrats are good, socialism is wonderful, and America is evil. But if you actually could read and you broke free of your Neanderthalish instincts, you would find out that everything I'm telling you is based upon fact, not opinion. Now let's go to some of the callers. Tara, KLIF in Dallas, thanks for calling. What's on your mind, Tara?
Hello, Michael Savage. I just wanted to call in and just tell you that I was appalled that Obama is going to Hiroshima. My great-uncle was actually the bombardier on the Enola Gay that bombed Hiroshima. And I've been actually around some liberals that just think it's appalling. And I point my finger and I'm like, you know what? I will never, my family will never apologize for what Uncle Thomas Farabee did for this great country. He saved thousands of lives. And I'm just humiliated and furious that...
Right, but we're living now with a president who was launched to power by the America-hating individuals around the world, the same people who gave us this pope who came from nowhere, the first non-European pope in 1,200 years, the same people who engineered Obama's rise from nothingness, are the same people who are leading us to the disaster of a new Soviet Union. This time it'll be a worldwide Soviet Union. It's already started with the European Union. We now have it with the North American Union, in essence, by erasing our borders. They want one world rule by unelected officials, and in order to get there, they've got to lie to the American people on an almost daily basis. We should be very proud of the men who were in the Enola Gay, and every soldier, sailor, and airman who fought in World War II, instead of apologizing, the president should get on his knees and thank God that they fought so that a man of such low caliber could rise to such a high position. Okay, I have much more I'd like to say right now, but I say thank you very much for that call, Tara, and I'll send you a copy of Something Happier, Teddy and Me, the book about Teddy and I. It's not a political book. It's something else, and I'll read from it later if I get into the mood. So let's look into the question of, was the U.S. justified in dropping bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki? Of course I say yes, because I've studied in great detail. And the left says no. Opinions are running both ways. Now, in Japan, only a small percent say the bombing was justified. About 85 or 90%, as you would expect, say atomic weapons should not have been used. So the debate over the atomic bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki continue. And it will go on forever. And as time goes on, more and more brainwashed youth in America will say, no, we shouldn't have done it. It was evil. And we should wring our hands and we should pay reparations to the Japanese. That's because our media doesn't even show you who the Japanese were at the time. Now, don't take this as anti-Japanese sentiment, because I have the exact opposite feeling about the Japanese people. I've been there twice, many years ago. I think it's one of the finest nations on the planet. At least when I first went there, it was an amazing nation. Started to go downhill after that with homeless in the streets and whatnot. A very advanced nation of very, very smart people is what I thought of Japan and what I still think of Japan. But we're not talking about the Japan of today. We're talking about the Japan of yesterday, more specifically the atomic bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. But why am I talking about it? Why am I dredging up ancient history? Because your communist president, or shall I say you can call him the NWO president, the New World Order anti-American president, whatever you want to call him, that man is going there next week, just around our Memorial Day, and instead of celebrating our military men who died in World War II, and even the military men who are living today to preserve our freedoms, he is doing the opposite. He is once again, not so subtly, attacking America on an apology tour. So as I say, you're going to read, oh, he didn't really apologize. That's what you're going to hear. Well, he did apologize. Just by going there around Memorial Day, he's apologizing. He shouldn't go there. No other president has ever gone there. Why is he going? Why did he visit Cuba with the two dictators, the Castro criminals? Why did he go there? Why would he go to a prison camp called Cuba at a time like this? Because he's trying to send the message that he's sympathetic to Castro. That if he could get away with it, he'd be like Castro with no Congress. He lays awake at night every night wishing to God he could be president for life and not have a Congress to deal with. That's his wildest dream. His wildest fantasy is for there to be no Congress and he could stay in office for the rest of his life, because he's a young man yet. Where could he go after 8 years of this? What could he ever do that would make him as happy as getting away with what he's getting away with? And then it's tied into the other questions, which is, I mean, I say dropping the atomic bombs were very necessary. Some of you will say it's unnecessary, and I've heard it all, I've read it all, and I can give you the arguments against them if you'd like. I can give them myself, because I'm going to get them from the leftists. And I have all of them. I know all of them. And people will say the following. They'll say the bomb was made for defense only. This comes from the communist left. They will say the use of the bomb was illegal, according to the League of Nations. They will say the use of the atomic bombs was racially motivated. They're wrong about that again. They will say there were alternatives. Well, there were no alternatives, by the way, other than starving the Japanese people into submission, and the military never would have given up, and more Japanese would have died that way. What are the alternatives? Well, so the leftists in the university say, well, they could have demonstrated the bomb. They could have dropped the bomb off the shore and scared the Japanese. That's absurd. The Japanese wouldn't have given up if they saw the demonstration bomb. It wouldn't have worked at all. Secondly, by the way, we didn't even know if the bomb was going to work. Did you know that? We had no idea whether the bomb would have worked or not. And that would have made the United States look weak and foolish. So the U.S. only had two bombs left after Los Alamos, and a failed demonstration might have even served to increase Japanese resolve if the bomb didn't go off. You get it? And if the demonstration bomb failed to convince the Japanese to surrender, only one bomb would have remained. And so even that one bomb might not have been enough to force surrender. So it's easy for you to sit there in your fat tenured position at Georgetown University and say, oh, yeah, we didn't have to do it, we're racist, blah, blah, blah. But those of us who had relatives who were going to go over to Japan and fight the land war know something different, as I told you yesterday on the Savage Nation. There was no acceptable alternative to direct military use of the bomb. Now, you could have argued that we could have waited for the Russians, by the way, to invade. That's a very interesting question. Because the Russians, by the way, at that point were almost ready to invade the home islands of Japan. I don't know if you know this. And it was a big deal, by the way. Because had the Russians invaded Japan, never mind how many more civilians would have died, but the Russians would have divided Japan the way Germany had been divided after World War II. There's another subtle element of World War II history that's rarely understood or discussed, but I think as the thought leader in talk radio, I am obligated to raise some of these questions. There were other alternatives. Let the Japanese keep their emperor. A lot of good he was. The emperor, a lot of good he would have done. Others say we could have continued conventional bombing. And what would that have done? That would have saved people? We firebombed cities in Japan, they wouldn't have given up. I don't understand this. What would bombing with conventional weapons have gotten us? Others will argue that the use of the bomb was more to scare Russia than to defeat Japan. I've seen all the arguments, pro and con. So let me throw another fact out for you. Did you know that the Japanese themselves were racing to develop a nuclear bomb and would have not hesitated to use it on, let us say, Los Angeles or San Francisco? You didn't know that? That didn't enter your mind? What would you have said? It would have been racism for them to drop the bomb in Los Angeles or San Francisco? That's number one. Number two, and it's not directly related, but it's a fact that you should know, because I know a little bit of esoteric history. President Truman, what was his name? Truman. Okay, so you say Truman, it means nothing to you. The Japanese are very interested in symbols and symbology, and particularly of names. When they heard that after FDR died, the vice president, Truman, became president, they were terrified because they said, the true man has arrived to run America. A true man. True man. And they were afraid that this true man was going to do things to them that no other man dared to do. Okay, so this is a little fact that you have to study Japanese history to understand. This is not often understood or taught. True man and how they saw it. Now, we all know the atomic bomb was inhumane. I mean, let's now pull it away. The bodies, the vaporization, the charred blobs of carbon, the horrifically burned, the individuals buried in rubble. I'm certainly not sitting here celebrating this. Don't get me wrong. We know the survivors faced radiation sickness. They faced horrible starvation, crippling mutilations. The damage to Japan was overwhelming. And so, yeah, is the magnitude of the suffering caused by the use of atomic weaponry on human beings should never, ever be forgotten. Never. And it's important for us to remember that. However, when you think things through and you go back to what the Japanese had done not only to America, but to other citizens, you start to understand what a vicious, horrendous world they came from at that time. They were some of the most vicious people on the planet. They were second none to Adolf Hitler. They conducted experiments. If I remember in Unit 437, I remember doing this show 15 years ago. There was a whole book written about it. Did you know that the Japanese conducted experiments on living American, Australian, and New Zealand prisoners living prisoners were submitted to some of the most ghastly experiments you could ever imagine. They took living American prisoners, Australian prisoners, New Zealand prisoners, and conducted the most horrific medical experiments you could imagine without anesthesia on them in a special unit, and it was conducted, if I'm not mistaken, in Manchuria. That's what they were doing at that time. You've forgotten, of course, the bombing of Pearl Harbor, just as you've forgotten 9/11. To you, it's not real anymore. 3,000 Americans died, and you're now on the side of the Islamofascists because you've been brainwashed by Wolf Blitzer, Jake Tapper, and Harvard University, not to mention the New York Times and the other fools in the American media who will do anything to go out of their way to make America look bad. So, yeah, it was a horrible thing to do. We should never use nuclear weapons again. Let's pray that nuclear weapons are never used again, etc., and so on. I've done my homily, and I've done my genuflection. But the fact of the matter is, if you study the times that they were in, it was the only choice that was had by President True Man. I'm Michael True Savage, and I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE.
On Talk Radio 560, KSFO.
Little Boy and Fat Man. That's what we're talking about today, Little Boy and Fat Man. One was a uranium bomb, and one was a plutonium bomb. That's an esoteric point that only scientists would care about. But we're talking about whether either Little Boy or Fat Man should have been used at all. It's easy to sit back 70 years later and say, no, we shouldn't have done it. We should have just wasted more American boys. And for that matter, by the way, more Japanese lives with a land invasion. And now we've come to the end of the road here with a president who is on the exact opposite of the spectrum of a militant president. He's militant only towards his domestic enemies and a complete and total patsy to our real enemies in the world, namely the Islamofascists, who would not hesitate for a second to set off a dirty bomb in New York City or Los Angeles should they get their filthy hands on the ability to do so. And they're racing around the clock to do it. God only knows, as I speak with you, who is sitting in a room somewhere in this country trying to figure out how to do such a thing in this world of ours. And what would happen, God forbid, if that happened is a separate question. The apology tour would begin, and the American people would start to say we deserved it. We deserved it because of the way we treated Muslims in the Middle East. You're going to hear it all, one way or the other. You already hear it at Harvard and NYU, probably your local high school. So I think we're talking about an important topic because it has many ramifications. And I'm talking about it for one reason, because this, your president, is going to Japan, specifically to Hiroshima. Is it Hiroshima next week or Nagasaki? Where's he going? I think he's going to Nagasaki. And Nagasaki was the second target, by the way. I don't know if you know this little piece of esoterica. The second target of Nagasaki was not scheduled to be attacked until 6 days after Hiroshima. The original war plans were, we'll bomb Hiroshima, give the Japanese time to surrender, wait 6 days, and then do Nagasaki. But there was bad weather in the forecast, and then something else happened. The Russians suddenly declared war on Japan after the first bomb because they saw weakness. So the great General Groves moved up the date to make sure that the plutonium bomb was field tested, so to speak, before the war could end. Trying to give you a little background on some of this. You say, who needs to know it or whatever. Well, I think it's an important topic. I'm a week ahead of the media on this. It's going to be a huge topic next week when your anti-American, anti-military, anti-family, anti-church, anti-science president does his apology tour in Japan. I'll be back in a minute.
Join the Savage Nation. Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Talk radio for the thinking person, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
Here we are in the Savage Nation. Hour number one was an A+. Should the United States have dropped nuclear weapons on Japan? I liked the hour. I thought it was a balanced hour. I hope you did. I don't intend to keep this going for the next hour, but I want to take the callers who have been waiting so loyally on the show, and then we're going to shift to other topics. The shooter, by the way, at the White House has been detained. The president was, of course, safe since he's rarely there. He was on the golf course, which is a blessing in disguise when you think about it. Think about the damage he could be doing was he not on the golf course so much. So, you know, there's a silver lining to his obsession with golf and entertainment and things of that nature, which is that if he was around 100% of the time, we'd have double the damage we have right now. So I thank God for Obama's golfing. Here's a little study connected to the militarism of Japan at that time. Came out today. YouGov poll, only 2% of men aged 18 to 24 feel masculine. Young men in Britain are reluctant to identify as masculine, and they think the term has negative connotations, according to a YouGov poll. This is published in Breitbart by Virginia Hale. Only 2% of the male respondents aged between 18 and 24 describe themselves as completely masculine, compared to 56% of over 65s. So now, this comes at a time when women vastly outnumber men at universities. Feminists are demanding male students sign pledges to tackle laddish behavior, L-A-D-D-I-S-H. As a result of the fanatical, insane feminists, only 2% of men in the so-called millennial group feel masculine. So now, my friends, you understand why the world is over. Now you understand why the Muslim invasion of England has been taking place. Now you understand why the Muslim and African invasion of Europe will continue to grow in importance. Now, my friends, you understand what's happening to the West. Now, this could have been predicted, and of course some of us who are prescient or plain old logical saw this coming, and we see what's coming next. But sometimes it's best to keep the X-ray vision to yourself. Sometimes a good oncologist does not disclose to the patient the extent of the cancer. You want to give the patient a little hope. So we'll ride on the fumes of hope that many of you have for a little while on the Savage Nation. Now let's go to the callers. WJR Radio in Detroit. Doug, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Michael, several points we could talk about. I have a lot of background here. I have spent over 100 nights in Hiroshima, probably a couple hundred days. I know probably hundreds of citizens of Hiroshima. My grandpa was on Okinawa when the war ended. I likely never would have known him had we not nuked him. I also have in my home autographed copy signed by Colonel Paul Tibbetts, who was flying the Enola Gay. He was commander of the squadron that dropped it, signed by he and the men on Enola Gay. And also a couple of the gentlemen that were on Boxcar that nuked Nagasaki. I have been twice on August 8th, I think it is, or 6th, in Hiroshima when they have their annual pacifism rah-rah ceremony. Also, I have spent 4 years of my career developing small ICBM, a Reagan-era defense buildup. It was an ICBM that would lob a 200-kiloton nuclear warhead 6,000 miles in 20 minutes on the Soviet Union.
Wait, slow down. Did you say a 200-kiloton weapon?
Well, the warhead's 200-kiloton TNT yield. That was a fusion or a hydrogen.
Explain that to the average listener. What does that represent? 200 kilotons. What is that equal to with regard to the bomb dropped on Hiroshima?
Okay, the one on Hiroshima was a small fraction of that. It was maybe, I can't even remember the yield of it. It's a small fraction, a tenth of the yield. They measure the yield in kilotons of TNT, tetranitrotoluene, or, very potent chemical explosive, basically the most potent one around. So 200,000 tons of TNT detonated would be the equivalent yield of the nukes that are in our current arsenal.
So do we still have them, or did Obama dismantle them the way he dismantled our great weapons that Samuel Cohn developed the neutron bomb? Do we still have nuclear weapons?
We have some. I don't know the details, but it angers me that we are disarming those systems. In fact, weapons as a technology are not good or evil. They are neutral. When the good guys have more and better weapons than the bad guys, they are a good thing. It goes right back to our inalienable right to defend ourselves, the Second Amendment.
That is exactly right. In other words, those of us who have guns in our houses don't intend to use them, but we're glad that we have them in case we have to.
And if we have to, then that's fine. We have to. It's not evil to have a weapon. It's not even evil to use it if we use it to defend freedom, to defend our families, our liberties, our religion.
So, Doug, are you a nuclear scientist by training?
I am an engineer. I'm more of a structures guy. I was involved in the propulsion and ordnance for small ICBM. In terms of my time in Japan, one other point, I have taught MBA courses on business and culture in Japan. I'm fluent in technical Japanese. I'm an engineer, more in structural mechanics with ordnance and propulsion when I was doing this.
And here you are listening to talk radio. I find that to be a great honor, by the way.
Well, I am in Obama's America. I am right now driving to a minimum wage job. In the last 10 years, I have been out of professional employment over half of it.
Are you kidding me? A man of your talents is driving to a minimum wage job, and he's spending tens of millions of dollars to give illegal alien children summer jobs?
I might be making a buck more than minimum if I'm a lead driver tonight.
That's heartbreaking. Doug, it's heartbreaking.
It's a brutal.
Brother, can you spare a dime? I wish to God you lived in my neighborhood, Doug, because I would offer you a position tomorrow somewhere in the Savage Nation world, whatever it would be, where you could use your brain. How could a man like you have a brain like that and not being used in this country? When all we're glorified, we hear the idiot, the morons, the uneducated sub-morons are held up and brought to the White House like role models.
Michael, there are thousands of people out there. I have them in my neighborhood, go to church with them, next door neighbors, a few houses away, thousands and thousands of people. And as you get a little bit older, it's even worse. You know, the unemployment rate numbers that we hear are total crock of crap. If you look at the numbers, I guess it's millions of people.
Yeah, I get it. So you're one of those who's not in the unemployment data. You're underemployed, let's say, doing a minimum wage job when you have such a brilliant mind and background. What a waste this is. God in heaven, if I had the power, could you imagine enlisting a core of the greatest minds of our generation in the senior communities who are being wasted away while we're catering to the... I can't even repeat what I'd really like to say. The refuse of the world. We're catering to the lowest common denominator, both intellectually, financially. How can a nation survive if we keep... You as a man with a mathematical mind, know how this ends. If you keep going to the lowest common denominator, where does this end mathematically? Okay. The laugh says it all. The laugh says it all. In other words, keep dividing the fractions and keep catering to the lowest common denominator. Where does this end? How does it end? We become a third world nation. Doug, all I can do is say, you know, I'm sorry for what happened in your life. I'll send you Teddy and Me because it's more cheerful than Government Zero. And I'm glad that you're a listener to the Savage Nation on the great WJR in Detroit. Wow. I never expected that. I would have thought that the man was an emeritus professor somewhere or retired in some degree of happiness working as a consultant. And here he is driving to a minimum wage job while the psychotic in the White House spends tens of millions of taxpayer dollars on jobs for illegal alien children, not for some senior citizens who have so much to give this country. Now let's go back to the question that I asked before, which is the issue of the bombing of Japan in World War II. The president will not apologize overtly. We know that. He knows it would be political suicide for Hillary Clinton for him to do that, because he's overly identified with her and he's going to be campaigning for her. And he knows how controversial that is. But as I said to you, symbolism is everything. The medium is the message, as Marshall Savage told you. The medium is the message. So there he is going to Nagasaki around Memorial Day weekend. He doesn't have to apologize. Just by going there, he's apologizing. Do you get it? Do you understand he's apologizing by going there? Does that bother you? Or it's nothing to you? Sherry, WBOB in Jacksonville, Florida. What do you think?
Yes. Thank you for taking my call. This is very close to my heart as well, and that last call breaks my heart, what's going on in this country by this so-called president. My mother's first husband was part of an elite team that was sent to England to break the German code, after which he was traveling in the Japanese islands to free our guys in camps. And it was after the war was over that he was hit by a Japanese.
I'm sorry, Sherry, your phone is breaking up. The wind was getting it. I heard what you said. It got across. And I understand you completely hate the president and for what he's doing to us. He's an absolute false idol. He is exactly the false idol we have all feared our whole lives. Those of us who have a brain understand the damage he is doing, and his damage is not over yet. But, you know, I don't want to talk about him today at all. I could spend hours talking about it and writing about it, which I've done. I'd rather speak to the truth, the justice, and the righteousness of this nation. The truth, the justice, and the righteousness of America. And I think we should bless those who gave us our freedoms, especially on Memorial Day. And I think we should put away the detestable things that the New York Times will be publishing on that date, that Obama is there fundamentally apologizing. And we should swear our allegiance to America all over again. I'll be right back on the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage. Radio 560 KSFO.
Wouldn't it be great to wake up one day and see America again? Where you see flags flying and people are proud to be Americans, and we put America first instead of America last, and all of these people who have done this to us, who have made us so embarrassed to be Americans and so embarrassed to be men, suddenly get their due. If I were to define the age we are living in, that we call the age of the harlot, and I would say that the age of the harlot is directly related to the attack upon men and masculinity. And on that note, I'm going to go to Jeremiah, one of the great biblical prophets. He would have been a great talk show host in his day. And you can read it for yourself, because we're living in the age of harlotry. If a man put away his wife and she go from him and become another man's, may he return unto her again? Will not that land be greatly polluted? Could you imagine what they thought of in those days? But thou hast played the harlot with many lovers, and wouldst thou yet return to me, said the Lord? Lift up thy eyes unto the high hills and see where hast thou not been lain with. By the ways hast thou sat for them, as an Arabian in the wilderness, meaning a horse. And thou hast polluted the land with thy harlotries and with thy wickedness. Now the Muslim listeners to this show, of whom there are many, many few, very few, understand this better than anyone listening to this show. Because they live this word. They live it to the core. They should understand that this that I just read to them comes from the Jewish Bible, from Jeremiah, and it's found in their own Quran in another way. And it doesn't mean that you have to kill anyone or beat them or conduct an honor killing. What you have to do is just teach, and try to teach through love and through peace, and teach through Christianity, the methods of Christianity, even though you may not be a Christian, because it's an inspiration when you think about that. The media has told us so much about other things, but the human being has other ways of getting a message across other than through hitting and through killing and through hating. I know this has been said before, but many of us don't know these messages anymore, and we have to talk about inspiration. And so that's what I'm trying to do today, and doing it in my own way, to inspire you to do your thing in the right way. There are many ways to achieve what you're trying to achieve. And that is through, well, some of you use religion, some use philosophy, some use poetry, some use science, some use painting, some use music. But where does inspiration come from? Where does your inspiration actually come from? I write about it in Teddy and Me. And I write, you cannot let the cynical times that we are living in deprive you of your humanity. Because if you lose your humanity, you're going to lose everything. That's on page 94. And then I write this. I mean, it's a book of pictures, but you know there are very important words in this book. It has fewer words than any of my other published books, but in some ways they're more inspiring than all my other books. Where does inspiration come from, I ask on page 95? Anger, rage, and false righteous indignation. Okay, fine, you can be inspired by all those things, but then you lose your humanity. That's the whole point I'm trying to make. You cannot let the cynical times that we are living in deprive you of your humanity. Because if you lose your humanity, you're going to lose everything. Even if you survive physically, you will die spiritually. So that's all in a book about a man and his dog. And having said that, I had a weird dream last night that I'm almost reluctant to tell you. Sometimes I tell you my dreams. And for those of you who are aficionados of the show, it was a very strange and troubling dream. It was about me having to pack up and leave. I guess on a vacation, I had to leave my dog behind. I was packing and trying to, you know when you pack, you have to reduce your whole life into a couple of bags and how troubling that is. And you try to make what should I take? What shouldn't I take? Even no matter how short the trip is, you're suddenly faced in some ways with your mortality when you go on a trip. Isn't that true? That's one of the reasons people like to take trips, because you can leave your past behind and escape for a day or two or a week or two or a month or two. But in this dream, I was trying to sort through what I needed to take, and it was a rush. I had to get somewhere fast. I had to get to a plane or something. And I was looking at my dog, and I had to leave him behind. And he was looking at me with those eyes that dogs have. I was saying, well, where are you going? Why am I not going with you? Why can't I go with you? It was a very troubling dream, because this dream was about a trip somewhere out to a place I had never gone to, and a place I really never want to go to. And I'll let it hang in the air at that. When I come back, we're going to shift topics and open it up to Open Mic to Mike Friday at 855-400-7282. 855-400-SAVAGE. I'll be right back. Join. It is Rock and Roll Friday on the Savage Nation. Breaking news, Secret Service shooting a man outside the White House. But don't fret, the president was not there. He was golfing. But Joe Biden was inside working. That's an oxymoron. Vice President Joe Biden was inside working. It's an oxymoron to say he was working. What could he be working on, doofus? Anyway, the White House was placed on lockdown. The man was not identified. I'm sure he'll be a militia man wearing a Make America Great hat. No doubt a member of the Trump campaign. A typical false flag just in time for the festivities of Memorial Day. Visitors wrote on Twitter that they saw lots of people with guns after shots were heard. Lots of people with guns. They had to shoot the man after the gunfire took place on 17th and E Street, one block west of the White House. So the armed man is in custody. It is not clear why he had a gun at the White House and what his intentions were. But let us all pray to God and say thank God that the president was not there, that he was busily playing golf on a Friday while the rest of you are working. 855-400-7282. The armed man is in custody. Again, we don't know who the armed man was. But I can pretty much paint this picture before it appears. I'm pretty good at these things. The armed man. I'm just guessing who the armed man will turn out to be. 855-400-7282. Is it possible to change gear now? I don't know. I mean, if this keeps up, I may not be able to do it. So let's move to some of the news topics. Mr. Ryan, the Rhino Ryan, did a bailout of Puerto Rico yesterday with Nancy Pelosi. She's just clicking her heels. She's thrilled to death that they got a bailout. God only knows what kind of money is going to flow up into the hands of the lobbyists and the congressional thieves as a result of the bailout. Now, they're not calling it a bailout. Here is the bumbler Pelosi denying that the Puerto Rico bill is a bailout in clip number 3.
We have a bipartisan agreement now, the bill that has been dropped. Of course, it would not be the bill we have written, but it does contain a restructuring that can work. It calls for the board the oversight board to treat everyone equally and fairly, and by that I mean pensioners and the rest, and it is not a bailout. Contrary to the misleading, God knows who's paying for them, ads on TV that this is a bailout of Puerto Rico. It is not.
Why isn't Puerto Rico disconnected from the United States and allowed to become independent? What do we need that appendage for? Puerto Rico is like an appendix in a human body. It's an unnecessary appendage of the United States. Why are we holding on to it? It's a basket case. It's a welfare state. What do we need it for? I don't understand it. I think that if they were self-governing, what would they be doing right now if Puerto Rico had self-governance, as so many nationalists want? Where would they be turning for money right now? This is the question that I would like to raise. We just bailed out Puerto Rico. Greedy criminals in Congress are celebrating because they're going to make tens, hundreds of millions, billions of dollars off this in ways we could never imagine. We can never even imagine how many different ways they can skin a bailout while not calling it a bailout. I know no one cares about us, so we won't even ask you that question. Puerto Rico, not an issue for most of us. People don't even know where it is here on the West Coast. On the East Coast, everybody knows where Puerto Rico is, but on the West Coast, nobody knows where it is. It's like when I lived in the East Coast and I first went to Hawaii, I thought that Hawaii was a part of the West Coast, like somewhere like 100 miles offshore. I really didn't know that Hawaii was 2,500 miles out in the middle of the Pacific. I had no idea. And most people on the West Coast are ignorant about Puerto Rico. They don't know where it is. They know it's something on the East Coast. And, of course, there's been screams for Puerto Rican nationalism for a long time now. Why do we need it as a possession or a territory? What do we get from it? Here again, we're bailing it out. It's a welfare state to begin with, so let them take care of themselves. Now, just for fun, here is Nancy Pelosi on Zika funding, because we all need a laugh on a Friday. If you got the cuckoo clock, Robert, you can run it in the background, because Nancy hasn't been heard from for a while. And any time there's a few dollars being spread around, she pops up from her jack-in-the-box hiding place in San Francisco. So now she's talking about the bailout of Puerto Rico, almost giddy with joy. And now she has something to say about Zika funding as well in clip number 4.
House Republican bill is reckless and radically unequal to the seriousness of the threat. Just think of it this way. They gave less than one-third of what the president asked for. They didn't make it an emergency, so they took the funds from other investments like Ebola, which have their purpose and should be left intact. I know they don't really value science, but this one even goes beyond that.
Look who's lecturing on science now. The bird brain. The bird brain is now lecturing on science. Okay, God only knows how the money from Zika is going to impact the four sisters of the apocalypse here in San Francisco. What kind of money is flowing to who? God knows how. I don't know how they could connect it up, but there's got to be something connected to shopping carts somewhere. Oh, now here's another one for Pelosi, but I think we've run through them. Because there's no grist in that mill. Let's see what else we have in the sound kitty for you while we're pandering for your calls. Would you like to hear a little Hillary? Here's Hillary Clinton on taking on Donald Trump in clip number 8. This is a good one.
Everybody gets knocked down and knocked around in life, and the real test is whether you get back up, you dust yourself off, and you keep going. Yeah. And my mother's life, which was really so different from mine because she was abandoned and neglected by her family and was out working on her own to survive at the age of 14,
poverty.
And someone's home as a maid and a babysitter. She taught me resilience.
All right, knock it off already. They're all victims. Billions of dollars. $300,000 for lecture. The hearts and flowers for the mother already. It was a maid. She's just like you. That's all. All right, now what do you want to talk about? WABC Nick, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, Mike. I have an idea about your dream. I know you're very attached to your dog, and my thinking is you're worried he won't be with you in heaven when you're gone.
Yeah, probably true. Probably true. I mean, he's a senior citizen, that's for sure.
I'm just as attached to my dog, so I know exactly how you feel.
What's wrong with us? Are we feminine for feeling this about our dogs? Have we lost our masculinity? Wouldn't a real man kick his dog and starve him like real men?
No.
Have we become feminized because we treat our dogs so well and we love them? Shouldn't we be like real men and kick them and starve them and treat them like lower animals?
No, of course not. They're like little kids to us.
Yeah, but I think it's a mark of our feminism that we become weak men because we love our dogs. I mean, real men don't treat dogs the way I do or the way you do. Real men beat them the way they do in the Middle East. They kick them, they beat them the way they do their wives and their daughters. I mean, that's the way a man behaves in the real world. I'm just being facetious, you know that. It's an amazing cultural phenomenon and an observation I made several years back that I increasingly see large, strong, brawny men with little dogs in parking lots coming out of their cars. Do you know that? You know, that's a social observation that's interesting unto itself. That a lot of big or strong men like little dogs because they have there's no one to love in the world. There's no one to give their love to. There's no kindness. There's no tenderness. And so they find it in a little creature. Isn't that amazingly true?
Yes, sir.
Okay, this is a crazy question, Nick. Are you a big guy or what?
Yes, I am. Very large.
How big are you?
6 foot, probably 270 pounds.
Wow. You're a really big guy. So what kind of dog do you have? Like a big one or a little one?
A little guy, a Pomeranian. He's 9 years old.
Isn't that amazing? So here's this big, brawny guy with a little dog. That's just what I said. I didn't know who you were when you called. So what draws you to a little dog? Because people would think a big guy is going to have like a big, scary, you know, press a canario, for want of a better dog picture.
I came across him, and I just fell in love with him. The way we just bonded instantly, and he was just like a baby. And I can't leave him anywhere. I don't go anywhere if I can't bring him. As far as vacations go. So he's like a baby.
Did you have children or do you have children?
No, I have no children.
So this is in essence really your child. It is like your child. What's your dog's name?
His name is Fox.
You mean like the news network?
I gave him that name because that's what he looks like, his face.
Well, he looks like Megyn Kelly? Does he look like Megyn Kelly before or after the nose became porcine? Anyway, I'm going to send you a copy of Teddy and Me, Confessions of a Service Human, because of all people, I think you'll enjoy it. Thank you very much. 855-400-7282. 855-400-SAVAGE. It's a Friday. It's open mic to Mike. I don't know, I haven't gotten off the ground today. I could feel that. It's not like I'm down, but there's nothing to be happy about. What's there to be happy about today in this world? Wherever you turn, it's miserable, horrible. The world is a horrible place. It's increasingly horrible. The president is a monster. It's getting worse. And so, you focus on the problems and you have to talk about them. I'm not going to sit here and make noises and sounds and play loud music just to keep you listening. I mean, I think that people are in denial as to what really is going on. I can go on, but now wind up reading from Government Zero about who he is and what he's doing. So let's one of the callers do it for us. Scott in Texas on KLIF. Welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Yes, sir. The reason the average American is not totally PO'd by what's going on, for example, with Obama, is that the average American brain can't get their head around the fact, or even the possibility, that a man like him is literally wanting to take this country down to ashes. His first week in his presidency, 7.5 years ago, he got on the Air Force One. There's a photograph on the Internet. The book he was carrying in his hand was Post-American World.
Well, he also, if you remember, and I don't want to turn this into an Obama bashing day because it's easy to do, I remember distinctly in the first days of his presidency when he climbed the steps of Air Force One, how tentative he was in his movements, and his look was, holy God, look where I've gotten. He never, ever expected to get where he is. This was a low-life, low-grade, non-performing senator, a community organizer of the most extreme leftist kind, who was catapulted into the most important position in the world, and he never, ever thought that he would get there. And from that day forward, it's been downhill for this country.
Yes, sir.
What can I say? I mean, we've said it before, and repeating it starts to sound like we're just making it up at this point, so there's no point in talking about it. There's a couple other sound bites that you really have to hear. Here's a good one. This is Hillary Clinton talking about Donald Trump being a terrorist recruiter in clip 10.
When you run for president of the United States, the entire world is listening and watching. So when you say, we're going to bar all Muslims, you are sending a message to the Muslim world. And you're also sending a message to the terrorists, because we now do have evidence. We have seen how Donald Trump is being used to essentially be a recruiter for more people to join the cause of terrorism.
See, this is the liberal mantra, that if you actually try to tell the Muslim world to get their act together, if you actually tell the Muslim world that we had enough of their garbage, if you actually tell the Muslim world that we're sick and tired of their terrorism, we're sick and tired of the hate in their biblical literature, if you actually have the nerve to say enough is enough and we're not a bunch of patsies and we're going to roll over, now they're saying, this is the Stockholm Syndrome. Anyone who stands up to this fanatical invasion is now called a recruiter of terrorism. So the opposite is true, huh? So in other words, if you bow down to them, if you let them impose Sharia law, they're going to love you more. Do you see the insanity of liberalism? This is the Stockholm Syndrome, but it's repeated from the highest offices in the land to the lowest offices in the land. I'll be right back on the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE. On Talk Radio 560, KSFO.
You're so fine. You're so fine.
You know, in times like these, with a backstabbing leader like this, and the threats that we face every day in this world, with everything upside down, catering to illegal aliens, releasing 10,000 hardened criminals from prison, letting old white men who have so much to give this society rot at minimum wage jobs. Many of you turn to the Bible. Many of you start to pray, or pray more than you ever did in your life. And one of my favorites is Jeremiah, who was a prophet. And he writes about troubling times in the biblical days. And in fact, we read that Obama, when you really read into what Obama and Kerry have done, they've committed a war crime. They gave Iran the ability to build a nuclear weapon or more than a nuclear weapon. They did it knowingly. They lied to the American people. Ben Rhodes, that filthy liar, the whiz kid they hired, the liar, literally was caught gloating over lying to the American people in saying that he was negotiating with moderates when he knew there were none. But the Bible answers this question of what is going to happen, and I wrote it down a long time ago in the Bible I have. And I wrote that my interpretation of Jeremiah 51 is that Israel will attack Iran and desolate it and leave it a sea of glass. And I will make thee a burnt mountain. That's what it's written here, because they are going to be attacked. At some point, they will attack Israel. And Jeremiah foresaw that, and he said, with thee will I shatter the nations, and with thee will I destroy kingdoms, and with thee will I shatter the horse and his rider, and with thee will I shatter the chariot and him that rideth therein. And with thee shall I shatter man and woman, and with thee will I shatter the old man and the youth. You see, the Bible was very clear of what happens in war, unlike the liberal who doesn't even know what they are facing. Truman knew it. He was probably a biblical man. I will shatter the husbandman and his yoke, and with thee I will shatter governors and deputies, and will render unto Babylon and to all the inhabitants of Chaldea all their evil that they have done in Zion in your sight, saith the Lord. He will destroy mountains. I will make thee a burnt mountain. Read the Bible. Laugh at it if you will. Many people believe in it. Be as cynical as you wish, because you have no control over the future.
Join the Savage Nation. Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Talk radio for the thinking person, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
He said, "Fun like a man."
Make this song today. Walk like a man. Can't even use the word man anymore with the radical psychotic feminists running the world. Welcome to the show. Walk like a man. Are you kidding? The only people allowed to walk like a man are the Islamic suicide bombers. They're welcomed into America. And then, of course, gangbangers from south of the border with tattoos on their neck coming in with drugs and with the intent to bring us harm. They're allowed to walk like a man. But, hey, if an American walks like a man, forget about it. They need re-education. Now, as I say this to you, the golfer in the White House is working around the clock to release a total of 70,000 felons from federal prison, going around Congress and trying to jam the Sentencing Reform and Corrections Act down the throats of the American people. So he wants to release 70,000 felons from federal prison. Now, right now, we happen to be going through the early stages of a new crime wave in America, which is being covered up by Wolf Blitzer, Jake Tapper, and the New York Times. We know that murders, rapes, and other violent crimes are up all across America. We know that by every poll, more and more Americans are concerned about crime, more so now than they have been in any time in the last 15 years. And yet Obama wants to release another 70,000 violent felons from prison. Do you know that your president, the golfer, has already released 30,000 felons from federal prison, thanks to the revisions in sentencing guidelines? And you know he wants to release another 40,000? Do you know that? And yet the recidivism rate is overwhelming. Well, the fact is that we now have fewer than 200,000 prisoners in the federal system. Did you hear that? And less than one-half of 1% of those, just a small fraction, that's just a few hundred, are in prison for anything like mere drug possession. And yet Obama would lead you to believe that these tens of thousands of prisoners are in there just for drug possession. But it's a small fraction, half of 1%. Small fraction, just a few hundred, are actually in prison for anything like drug possession. Most of them, by the way, are in there for multiple felonies. And so Obama wants them out of prison. Why? Why does Obama want another 70,000 hardened felons out in the streets? I'll let you figure it out. Phone number is 855-407-2282. This week was a big week in the broadcast universe of my show. On Monday, we talked about free speech. That was not Monday. Let's go back to the shows. Tuesday, May 17th. Oh, I can't read all of this. The best show of the week were the hallucinogenic drug horror stories. And Where is God? What is the truth? That was my best show of the week. What is truth? And where is God? And that same day on Wednesday, we talked about psychedelic horror stories, what they've done to your life. We also disclosed that the psycho in the White House is spending tens of millions of dollars to create summer jobs for illegal aliens, not for Americans of any race. And then I gave a story on Wednesday that was disturbing, but it's not the first time I've asked the same question, which is you had two rabbis, very orthodox rabbis. I don't know who they were or know what they were as people, but let's say they were religious, very religious men. They were in Miami on a little vacation. They were waiting waiting, W-A-D-I-N-G, not waiting for Godot. They were waiting in the ocean. And a riptide came and pulled them out and drowned them. So I said, well, why would God take their lives? I have no answer to that. I have no answer to these questions. A Christian school bus goes off a cliff and 16 children are killed. Why? I don't know the answer to this. See, I don't believe that God is omnipotent. I've said that 1,000 times and many of you don't even want to talk about God. But all right, just for the moment. God does not control everything that happens to you. And if I believe that, I'd have to believe he's an evil God. Because I can't believe that the innocent are being punished for something they did in another life. I don't believe that. I can't buy that for a minute. That the children suffering leukemia are suffering because of something they did in the past life. It would make me a madman to believe that. So I don't believe that. So I came to the conclusion many years ago, when I was troubled with these questions, by reading a book that said, I forget the name of the book, but he wrote that God is not omnipotent, God is omnipresent, meaning God is everywhere. But God doesn't control everything that happens on the earth. Not every, you know, movement of a leaf is being moved because God said move that leaf. Or the bug crawled across the leaf. Aha, God moved the bug on the leaf. It's not what we're talking about. Things happen. He sets things in motion. He set up the earth. Evolution took place. And here we are. And it's an experiment that's gone wild. That's why he went on probably to another universe. I don't think he's revisited this planet in quite a while. Maybe not the whole, I don't think he's been here for a while. He set it up as an experiment to see what would happen if he let lower animals become men. And take a look at what's happened. And he figured, oh God, what a mess I made here. Let me go on somewhere else. This is not working out. So maybe he's busy somewhere else creating another planet, another human verse somewhere, where the madness of our times could never evolve. Don't know. Have no way to know that. All I know is we have to get through this some way, right? And so, my friends, we're trying our best to identify as decent, God-fearing, America-loving people. It gets harder every day with the constant propaganda against our way of life, does it not? Look at what I've been pushing for so many years, borders, language, and culture. Now, you know I'm right. You know I've been ahead of the curve on this. And yet, there is a constant movement against our borders, against our language, and against our culture. So much so that the message itself seems somewhat quaint to believe in borders, language, and culture, just as it's somewhat quaint to believe in this archaic term of masculinity. Why should you raise your little boy to be a man? Isn't that somewhat sexist? Well, this is the kind of insanity that we're living through. And the same people who are pushing it have nothing to say about the violence being promulgated by so many of those that Obama is rushing into this country. And that, my friends, is the beginning of this program. Joshua on KLIF in Dallas, line 3. Joshua, go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation radio program.
Howdy. I wanted to comment about your comment maybe this week. You said truth is survival. And Jack London, he actually... the opposite way. He drew spirituality from survival, you see. And then you also asked today, does a real man, big man, mistreat an animal? And again from Jack London, on that western frontier, their animals were their best friends and their mode of survival. And then the comment that the tender mercies of the wicked are cruelty to animals. That's what either Proverbs or Psalms says.
Well, I hear what you're saying, and I'm a student of Jack London. I haven't read him in many, many decades. I was once a big reader of his. I didn't know that he said, what did you say, survival? Was survival itself became, what, spiritual? Is that what you were implying?
Yeah, definitely. And he doesn't use that quote. He doesn't say that, but it's...
You mean living on the edge and learning how to survive on the edge brought him closer to God?
You said it, not me, and that's true, too. Absolutely. And I think any one of us could say that whenever we've been in trial and tribulation, that's whenever you...
That's right. That's right. A couple of years ago, I can't disclose what happened, but yet maybe I should get close to it without talking about it because I'm not looking for sympathy. Let's just say I wound up in the emergency room. It wasn't a heart attack, but I wound up in the emergency room, and... I only stayed off the air for one day. Well, I recovered very, very quickly. I was scared to my core by what had happened to me. Something came out of nowhere. I felt it was God's hand talking to me. I was only off the air for one day because I fought with everything in me not to be destroyed by what had happened inside me. And through willpower and I guess the grace of God, I recovered rapidly. Well, I went and saw this specialist a week later, then 2 weeks later, and he said to me, you're 100% recovered. And he said, I want you to understand something, Michael. He said, I have patients who had happened to them what happened to you in 1978, and they're still crippled from it. He said, it's something extraordinary, your recovery. I'll never forget the moments that I didn't know whether I would recover or not. But I do understand that God could take a life away at any moment. I know that. Now you say, well, is it God reaching down? Isn't that in contradiction to what I just said? Well, there, my friends, are the horns of the dilemma. And a sane man knows how to function with two thoughts at the same time, at the same moment. I'll be right back on the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE.
You're listening to Michael Savage and the Savage Nation on Talk Radio 560 KSFO.
I couldn't sleep at all last night. Just
21 minutes after the hour, Savage Nation. So here's some headlines. The group that Obama set up to help sell the false narrative about the Iran nuclear deal also secretly funded the left-wing media, including NPR. Now, if I were president or advising Trump, which I'm neither, I would immediately investigate NPR, and if it was found that they were propagandists for this current regime, they would be closed down, their assets seized, all their houses would be taken away from them, and all of their assets would be redistributed for the crimes they have committed against the truth. Here's another little article. North Carolina school board votes to stop naming valedictorians due to, quote, unhealthy competition. In other words, because there are so many morons in our schools now, there are so many non-English-speaking idiots who should never have been brought into the schools, they can't keep up with those who are able to keep up with learning. So now the North Carolina school board has voted to stop naming valedictorians because it sets up an unhealthy competition. They want to reduce the competition among students. The Wake County School Board unanimously gave initial approval that would prohibit principals from naming the two top-ranking students in a graduating class after 2018. The News and Observer reported that this upsets many, many students who can't keep up. Now, I think they should eliminate grades entirely. In fact, they should eliminate language in schools because language itself is discriminatory. If you cannot speak language, especially the English language, properly, I think it would embarrass you. And the last thing we want to do is make the newcomers uncomfortable. So if they're speaking one of the 70 languages that Obama has brought into our public school systems and they can't keep up with English speakers, I think English itself should be eliminated. And I think that we should revert to bongo drums in the halls as a method of communicating, maybe hand signals, smoke signals somehow, gesturing. I think gesturing should be brought back to the schools. And grunting. I think that grunting should be introduced to the schools as a legitimate form of communication. And anyone who speaks English should be demerited, possibly removed from the school. And if they speak it too well, they should be considered a racist or a nationalist, even worse. I believe that hand signals and grunting should be reintroduced. You say, what do you mean reintroduced? Well, it's the way animals communicated initially. And I think we should revert to the cave age and communicate with hand signals and grunting and gesturing. After all, at Redwood High School here in Marin County, they have a $3 or $4 million building that they built with some money, not for a science lab, but for thespians, in order to learn how to gesture in tights, to learn how to be better entertainers and performers in Marin County. That's a very useful thing to teach your child, is how to be a performer. Now, very important. Does every idiot goes to NYU Film School to be a movie maker? Take a look at the trash they put out. They wind up living in your living room on your couch till they're 42, and they don't know why the Hollywood hasn't called them. But nevertheless, getting back to this issue of no more valedictorians, I think that's possibly a positive step in the progressive direction. And I think that this new policy is a good one, because there are other ways to recognize student achievement instead of studying. Why are you studying and student transcripts? I think that they should eliminate them. And I think they should eliminate Latin titles such as cum laude, magna cum laude, summa cum laude, summa magna cum laude. I think they should get rid of that, because it's an ancient language of the dead white male. I think they could use some other formulas for recognizing achievement in school, such as the number of times you've slept with classmates. That could be a ranking in the high schools of today. Wouldn't that be an equal ranking to summa cum laude, how many different people you've slept with? I think that's much healthier in the new America under Obama. I think such high requirements for magna cum laude are just overwhelming for students. You give them a target that they can shoot for, like sex with strangers. And if they can achieve that and they get recognized for that, they'll feel better. They'll have more self-esteem if they can achieve that. And I think they should have awards for things like that. given out by the perverts of Hollywood. Here's another one that Obama did to this crazy society of ours. Feds order colleges to stop checking criminal and school discipline history. Are you ready for this one? Feds order colleges to stop checking criminal and school discipline history because it discriminates against minorities. The Obama administration has ordered the nation's colleges and universities to stop asking applicants about criminal and school discipline history because it discriminates against minorities. In other words, more minorities commit crimes and act against the order of the school, so therefore that's discrimination? I don't understand that one, other than it's Alice in Wonderland. It's Unbrave New World. This is the same as the insane thing saying that criminals are no longer criminals. They are justice-involved individuals. This is not doublespeak. This is not Orwellian. This is the new America. This is the new America under the golfer in the White House that is aiming to remove barriers to higher education for the overwhelming minority population that had encounters with the law or disciplinary issues through high school. They're not bad children. It's the system that's bad. And if only you would see that it's the system that's responsible for the rapes that the minority may have committed. Or it's the system that forced them to pistol whip an old woman and steal her pocketbook. Or it was the system that forced them to do those horrible things. You'd understand how racist you are. And so this is a new document issued by the U.S. Department of Reeducation. And what you want to understand is that people of color are more likely to come in contact with the justice system, not because they committed crime, but because of punitive school disciplinary policies that disproportionately impact certain student groups because of racial profiling, not because they did anything wrong. And so we have to eliminate such investigations and terms and eliminate grades and language in order for everything to be equal.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE.
We're in a countdown for the last days of America. Next week, your president, not mine, your president, I didn't vote for him, he represents the extreme far-left band of American politics. He is not really an American in the sense that he's an America laster, hates the country. Next week, your president will be going to Japan, specifically to Hiroshima, and he will not apologize, but just by going there, he's apologizing for America having won World War II. Instead of celebrating Memorial Day with Americans, he is going to go to Japan and basically genuflect before the Japanese, in essence saying, I'm sorry just by being here because I'm not really like the rest of them. I'm different. And I've been studying, as I did yesterday on the Savage Nation, I've told you that bombing Hiroshima saved Japanese lives. An invasion would have been much worse, not only losing about 500,000 American boys, but Japanese lives as well. I told you that the civilians had been training for months to kill the white boy, the Yankee, when he arrived in Japan. Even old women were being taught to cut bamboo stakes into knives and to kill any foreigner who appeared in the streets. So the question is, what do you think about the bombing of Japan? Should the U.S. have dropped nuclear weapons on Japan? I've read all of the sides of it. Some fools, of course, make it racism. The fools say, well, why didn't they use the bomb on the Germans? Because they were white. They only used them on Japan because they were Asians. Well, that's a fallacious statement for two reasons. One, because Germany had already been crushed and defeated by the time the atomic bombs had been dropped on Japan. Secondly, need I remind you, those of you who never went to the School of Reality, many German cities had been firebombed to ash prior to the use of the nuclear weapons. So the fact of the matter is, Japan needed to be bombed with atomic weapons to stop the war. They were not going to give up. They were a militant people. And by the military standards of World War II, attacking whole cities to destroy military targets within them, within those cities, was quite normal. I want to remind you, the British, the Germans, and the Japanese had firebombed whole cities, as did the United States against Germany in the last few months of the war. So looking at it in the context of 1945, dropping atomic weapons on Japan was quite reasonable. There was nothing racist about it, despite what the left has fed into your children's heads. The U.S. had firebombed Dresden, Germany, to see if it was effective. And by the way, we firebombed Dresden in the same month and year that we began firebombing Japanese cities. So it's not racism. It's only the hindsight of racists who hate America, who make it into racism, like Barack Obama, who's going to go to Hiroshima again, committing another horrible act against the American military and against the American people. Bombing Hiroshima saved Japanese lives, according to every expert, except the communists in the universities and the fellow travelers in government. I mean, I'll remind you again, there's a great article on it by James Gibney, published by Bloomberg. Bombing Hiroshima saved Japanese lives. If you're in the mood to read something as opposed to just speaking, you can do that. And it's a long article. I have it on michaelsavage.com. The article is exactly right on why the U.S. was justified in dropping both nuclear weapons on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. I want to remind you that after the first atomic bomb was dropped on Hiroshima, the Japanese were given the opportunity to surrender, and they didn't. Remember who the Japanese were ruled by then. They were ruled by the military. It was a military junta that ruled Japan. It was not a civilian government, and they would not give up because they were trained in the Japanese art of Bushido, where they'd rather commit suicide than ever surrender. Did you know anything about that fighting spirit, which is quite admirable, by the way? I don't know if you know that, but it's quite admirable. And so, as I said to you yesterday, it's easy to sit here in the year 2016 and say, oh, yeah, we shouldn't have done it. We should have just wasted American lives and more Japanese civilian lives, by the way, by conducting a land invasion. But you don't know history if you make a statement like that. History dictates the opposite is true. So this debate's been going on for 7 decades now, every year, as we creep closer and closer to this anniversary. We debate whether the U.S. government was evil for having dropped atomic bombs on Japan. And, of course, the left wing says, oh, no, we shouldn't have done it at all. We caused the war. I've heard it all. And, of course, it's easy to do so in a fat classroom living on tenure. But they weren't living in those times. And, you know, it's a strange phenomenon for me because I remember being a little child in New York around that time when the bomb was dropped. I remember to this day, I was a little child running in the streets. And I remember seeing, I don't know, it was the Daily News, some like a mushroom cloud on the front page of the New York Daily News, if I can remember it correctly. And I remember freaking out. I was a little kid. I remember grabbing the paper and running up and down the street, Longfellow Avenue in the Bronx, screaming, the world is coming to an end. The world is coming to an end. The world is coming to an end. I guess they thought I was crazy. I guess they thought I was nuts. No kid would do a thing like that. How would a kid have the foresight to even know what it was? How old was I? 3 years old? I couldn't have been more than 3 years old when I saw that picture, 1945. How did I have the foresight to pick up the paper and even say a thing like that? Well, the world surely came to an end for the Japanese in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And we sit here in America today, not even thinking about the fact that there are Islamo-fascists amongst us who are plotting every day while you take your child to nursery school to blow them up with a nail bomb, or if they can get their hands on nuclear material, set off a dirty bomb in the United States of America. And I will tell you this. If any of these Islamo-fascists ever did succeed, God forbid, in doing so, you would hear people at Harvard and other denizens of mental insanity saying that we got what we deserved. If you think I'm wrong, you don't know reality. I do. Now, let me give you another fact on this. As war got closer to the homeland of Japan, the Japanese government encouraged families to send their children into the countryside to escape bombing raids. So at the end of the war, there were nearly 1.3 million children who had been evacuated. But do you think that the government only had their safety in mind? You'd be wrong. An author by the name of Yamashita, who says that the bombing of Japan saved Japanese lives, said that they were intent on transforming the little children into what it calls splendid little citizens who embodied national virtues. So what were these natural virtues? Well, they were very militaristic. The children kept diaries, which the government regularly inspected. They wrote comfort letters to soldiers on the front lines. They greeted processions carrying the boxed ashes of war dead. And they then taught the children to think about what will happen with the attacks of the foreign devils. They taught the children, we must harden our spirits and resolve to launch a great counterattack. And so as the military was depleted, the military resorted to special attack units, the kamikaze pilots, and teachers hero worshiped these suicide squads as divine spirits who had, quote, reached the territory of understanding, whatever that means. But listen what the children were doing. The evacuated Japanese kids were sent on long hikes into the woods to forage for firewood, bamboo shoots, edible roots, frogs, grasshoppers, and then they were given over to exercising in spear fighting, sword play, and hand grenade throwing. And on these trips with the children, some of the teachers broke away to learn how to fly gliders to be loaded with explosives and flown into Allied ships. Well, you can read about it yourself, about the special attack units, the cultivation of militarism in the children, and such. And so you say, well, why didn't we just let them starve themselves out? Why did we have to bomb them? Well, think about what you just said. The left says, well, we didn't have to bomb them. Japan would have given up because they would have been starved to death. Do you understand what you just said? Do you have any idea what you're saying? How many Japanese would have died of starvation waiting out those 2 or 3 years until they would have surrendered? Secondly, they never would have surrendered, by the way, because Japan's military-dominated cabinet was still arguing whether to surrender after the Hiroshima bombing when news arrived of the bombing of Nagasaki, and they still didn't give up. They still wouldn't give up. Did you know that after the second nuclear weapon? Because they had Bushido, the fighting spirit, which said better dead than surrender. Think about what I'm saying to you. We are the opposite of that country today. I think it's a valid topic because once again we have the American president on an apology tour choosing the time when we celebrate our veterans to go to Japan and commit one of the most horrendous anti-American acts you can imagine. Just by going to Hiroshima, listen to what I just said to you, he doesn't have to apologize. By going there, he's apologizing. Do you understand that? This is how subtle this anti-American president of yours is. By choosing to go there around Memorial Day. Memorial Day is not about your barbecue. Memorial Day is not about you getting drunk. Memorial Day is about remembering the men who died to give us the freedoms that we enjoy today. Of all races, by the way. And so for this anti-American president of yours to choose that time to override in a certain shadow his little visit to Japan, instead of celebrating victory in the Pacific, more specifically victory over the Japanese Imperial Army, Navy, and Air Force, what he's doing is saying to America, you should be ashamed of yourself for having won World War II. I don't know what's next. Maybe he will go to before December is out. Maybe he will go to Germany and celebrate some kind of holiday that the Germans celebrate, having sympathy for the poor Nazis who died in World War II. We don't know how far this man would go. Maybe he'll go to Moscow on Red Square Day to celebrate the poor Russian soldiers who died in World War II. We don't know how far this man will go. The debate over the atomic bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki continue. And it will go on forever. And as time goes on, more and more brainwashed youth in America will say, no, we shouldn't have done it. It was evil. And we should wring our hands and we should pay reparations to the Japanese. That's because our media doesn't even show you who the Japanese were at the time. Now, don't take this as anti-Japanese sentiment because I have the exact opposite feeling about the Japanese people. I've been there twice many years ago. I think it's one of the finest nations on the planet. At least when I first went there, it was an amazing nation. Started to go downhill after that with homeless in the streets and whatnot. A very advanced nation. A very, very smart people is what I thought of Japan and what I still think of Japan. But we're not talking about the Japan of today. We're talking about the Japan of yesterday, more specifically the atomic bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. There's another subtle element of World War II history that's rarely understood or discussed, but I think as the thought leader in talk radio, I am obligated to raise some of these questions. There were other alternatives. Let the Japanese keep their emperor. A lot of good he was. The emperor, a lot of good he would have done. Others say we could have continued conventional bombing. And what would that have done? That would have saved people? We firebombed cities in Japan they wouldn't have given up. I don't understand this. What would bombing with conventional weapons have gotten us? Others will argue that the use of the bomb was more to scare Russia than to defeat Japan. I've seen all the arguments, pro and con. So let me throw another fact out for you. Did you know that the Japanese themselves were racing to develop a nuclear bomb and would have not hesitated to use it on, let us say, Los Angeles or San Francisco? You didn't know that? That didn't enter your mind? What would you have said? It would have been racism for them to drop the bomb in Los Angeles or San Francisco? I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
It was a scary situation. I was there. I saw it. It was frightening. I was on the stage, and people were 6 feet away from me. And if I didn't have a lot of security, I don't know what would have happened. I said that to Bernie. I said that publicly. When you have people not listening to a word and angry, their faces...
Okay, here's Barbara Boxer, what goes around comes around. A woman who's not listened to a word any of her constituents have ever said to her, suddenly shocked that the Sanders communist supporters intimidated her. But, of course, she's surrounded by security, and she packs a pistol. Even though she's anti-gun and wants to take away your right to bear arms, she's a pistol-packing mama. She's shocked that they threw a chair at her. No one threw a chair at me, but she was frightened. She said they wouldn't listen to her, and they were angry. Which leads to a question, by the way, which is, why are the Sanders supporters so angry at the mainline corrupt Democrats like Boxer? What are they angry about? It's pretty clear what they're angry about. So now what I want to do in the waning moments, filling the void of insanity for you on the Savage Nation. I mean, most people have empty lives and the world is an empty place. I mean, you can only look at the blue sky and white clouds for so long until you start to get a feeling in the pit of your stomach that something's wrong, that you're missing the ball somewhere. And so you tune into talk radio to try and fill the emptiness. Let's go together, boys and girls, to my website, michaelsavage.com, home of Borders, Language, and Culture. And on the right, we have a story from Ricochet entitled, Google Celebrates Bin Laden, Fidel Castro, and Che. Oh, yeah. How is it that billionaires at Google celebrate the communist left? Pretty clear they've been doing it for ages. Here's another one. Ferguson Black Lives Matters leader who spoke at UN arrested for pimping. That's not unexpected. In fact, it should be celebrated. It's a lifestyle. Michael Savage's poignant, brilliant Teddy and Me. It's another article. Bombing Hiroshima Saved Japanese Lives by James Gibney. Your friends in ISIS are using nitric acid to kill and torture citizens in Mosul. But pay no attention to that. Instead, pay attention to people who are insensitive to transvestites in America. ISIS is using nitric acid to kill and torture citizens in Mosul. They're throwing homosexuals off roofs. They're lowering people into a tub until the victim's organs dissolve. But instead, pay attention to people who are too masculine in America. And then you'll understand why the world is dissolving right in front of your eyes. Sean Penn's movie, The Last Face, ripped apart on Twitter after the Con debut. Here is a man who thinks he's a director, but those in Hollywood don't. Apparently he did a movie about, it's called The Last Face. And it's about two reasonably good-looking movie stars, I suppose, on a humanitarian mission to Africa, of course. You know, Sean Penn has to show that he's very politically astute. So he created a humanitarian romance called The Last Face. Well, Twitter went crazy on it. It premiered at the Cannes Film Festival. And people wrote things such as, well, read them yourself. IndieWire's Eric Cohn branded it as the worst film of Penn's career. He wrote, the narrative panders on every level. It's a supercilious attempt to bemoan the hardships of neglected people under the guise of whiny romantic fluff. I think that sums up everything I've said about Barack Obama and the American left. Thank you for filling the void with me on the Savage Nation. Until Monday, have a great weekend.